Good morning, Arizona. Thank you for joining us this morning. On the phone, we should have Adam. He's going to give us an update on what's going on with the fire. Adam, can you hear us?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, tell us what's going on.
Hi, good morning. So the Bighorn Fire, last night we had our infrared flyover. We stand at 42,800 acres. We are 21% containment, and we have over 900 personnel working on this fire.
Wow. So have you had any drones in the air lately?
So we had those first couple incursions we had a couple weeks ago, but we haven't had any other incursions since as far as the drones go.
Yeah, we're trying to tell people to stop with the drones, let the guys do their job. And I know we've got people from out of state helping, or is it just out of Pima County?
As far as firefighters on the fire?
Right.
Yeah, so there's firefighters from all over the country now. A lot of the western states, I've seen trucks from Idaho, Utah, Oregon, Washington, California, New Mexico, Colorado. We really have a robust system of firefighters and personnel in place to help us fight this fire.
That's awesome. It's so good to see the guys roll into town to help us out. I understand that some of the fire has been encroaching closer and closer to Summer Haven. Is there anything that we can report on that?
So we still have no structures lost in Summer Haven. The firefighters are doing a really good job up there. So early on in this week, as the fire approached the western side of Mount Lemmon there, where the observatory is, we had done some burnout operations, and it pushed the fire around the northern portion of Summer Haven. It did get close to the fire station, as some people saw, but the fire station is okay. It is now continuing around the eastern portion, and we have been doing some burnout operations below the Bigelow Observatory and radio towers just to protect those values at risk.
I was driving on the east side of town yesterday, and that's actually the first time I could see, in the daytime, I could see flames. So I was a little concerned. It seems to be crawling over this side of the mountain.
Yeah, so the fire's been on the front range of the mountains, or the south side of the mountains, for about a week now. Everybody saw originally when it was getting into Pima Canyon and Finger Rock Canyon. It has now started, it got into the top of Ventana Canyon a couple days ago, and has now started backing down Ventana Canyon. So a lot of people have been able to see visible smoke and fire as it makes its way down the Ventana Canyon side.
Well, I hope everybody out there stays safe, and I appreciate you calling in and letting us know what's going on. We want people to not go into the areas, let the men do their work. Once the fire is over with, then, you know, we'll have new rules to tell you how to stay safe up there. As I imagine, when the monsoon hits after this fire, it's going to be a whole new definition of safety.
Yeah, absolutely. So you hit on some good points. We do have a lot of resources going into the Ventana Canyon area today, and it is there is some congested areas up there. So we ask people to stay away, just to let our firefighters get in and get to places they need to be to do their work. And there will be some concerns once the monsoons start. You know, the monsoons will be able to help us contain and control this fire, but some issues will be the rain and the flooding and the fire scar afterwards. We have our bear team that comes in after fires, and they help to mitigate some of that.
Your bear team?
Yeah, burn area.
Oh, burn team.
Yeah, it's called a bear team, and it's they go into the burn area afterwards and put procedures in place to reduce the flooding, get trails back open, just to try to get the fire scar back to normal in a more efficient manner.
The other thing is the wild animals that are being relocated by themselves. They're relocating themselves. What do people need to be aware of regarding that?
Yeah, so that'd be a great question for game and fish, but because of this fire isn't affecting their habitat, there's a good chance that the wildlife could be coming down out of the mountains. And so just be aware. Like any wildlife, they're great to look at, take pictures of, but let's stay away from them.
Okay, I'll do that. No problem. Okay, well, Adam, I appreciate you calling in and giving us an update, and I can tell my friend Kathy that your house is okay so far. And
yes, absolutely.
Hopefully.
Absolutely. No houses lost, so Kathy's doing okay.
Perfect. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay. In the studio, we have from Homeland Security, Tammy Breitsky.
Good
morning. I say it right?
You did.
Okay, cool. I've been practicing. And we're going to talk about human trafficking in the program that you have in Tucson. But before we do that, I want you to tell our audience, our listeners, a little bit about you.
Well, I've been in Tucson about 10 years now, and I, as you said, work for Homeland Security Investigations here in Tucson. I supervise the Border Enforcement Security Task Force that works Southern Arizona, and we focus on human trafficking investigations. So I have special agents and task force officers that work these cases here in Tucson.
And how long has Saturn been a part of our Tucson area?
So Saturn was originally a grassroots type effort to get all of our law enforcement partners and our victim service providers together working in a task force type environment. And we were funded for a 3-year period that began back in 2015. And since then, we were no longer funded, but we are still a functioning task force that still works together. So we've been around for a long time, and we've done a lot of good work here in Southern Arizona.
Is it a Southern Arizona agency, or is it something that's national?
So this is just it's the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network.
And you were responsible for starting it.
I was part of it, yep. I was one of the founding members. There are several great people from the Tucson Police Department, from Kodak Behavioral Health Services, FBI, the county. A lot of good agencies came together when we initially started working on this. I can't thank the U.S. Attorney's Office enough for all of the work that they did to help us form and develop and continue to grow into what we are today.
Yeah, I know it's a powerful organization, and they do great things. And if you haven't heard of it, it's Saturn, S-A-A-T-U-R-N. I'm reading it right off your shirt. And look it up. Check out their website. There's a lot of great information there. But we're going to go over some of these things. But before we get started on the organization and what you do, I want to take a quick break. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Tammy from Homeland Security. If you have any questions, the number is 790-2040. And I want to talk about what the initiative is doing now and explain to people a little bit about, if you're a victim, what to expect. I think sometimes the unexpected scares people away.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. So the way that Saturn operates is we have our, obviously, law enforcement side, a lot of great partners that are working together at the state, local, federal level. But then we're also working with victim service providers. We're working with non-governmental organizations, a lot of faith-based organizations, a lot of community volunteers. So there are a lot of different elements to who we are as a group. And when we encounter a victim or a report of a victim, they have the opportunity to talk to law enforement. And certainly we encounter them as the initial encounter oftentimes. So they're automatically with us, and we can talk to them from a law enforcement perspective. But even when they have called in for services or they've come through a faith-based group, they are our first priority. We work off of a victim-centered approach. Homeland Security Investigations as an agency works off of this victim-centered approach. And so when a victim is encountered, Their well-being and the resources that they need, the services that they need, comes first. And then the law enforcement investigations, that comes second. If we can make it happen, that's what we want. We want to be able to get a hold of the trafficker and get him prosecuted. But as a victim, what they can expect when they call in is to talk to somebody that wants to know how they are, how they're doing, what they're dealing with initially. And that's where it starts for them. Now, obviously, if we come into contact with them and in a law enforcement capacity, things have a different beginning point for them. But as soon as we can get them in touch with victim service providers for whatever they need as their very first basic needs are taken care of first, and then we look at long-term care, which we really rely on our victim service providers for that.
I know sometimes somebody will call in and they're afraid because they've had their family threatened, they've had their life threatened, And how do you deal with, you know, protecting them from the people that are making these threats? And I'm sure there's more than one in control of them.
Sure. So, you know, sometimes people, they need a safe place to go. They maybe live with their trafficker, with their abuser, and they need a safe place initially. That's one of their first basic needs. For a lot of people we come into contact with, they just need food. They haven't eaten. They need to detox. They've got some drug issues going on, or they need a shelter that they can go to. So we work with a lot of partners like Gospel Rescue Mission here in Tucson. The Salvation Army has been helpful here in Tucson with offering a place for them to go. Sometimes we have to find placement out of state because their situation is so dangerous and their trafficker is threatening to come find them. So for some of our victims, we work with other states, other service providers in different states as a network to be able to get them to a safe place. Now, on the law enforcement side, obviously, we're going to conduct our investigations and try to get the evidence we need to charge the trafficker and get them off the street. But in the meantime, there's a process.
Okay, so when somebody calls in, they can expect, number one, help, shelter, food, maybe clothes. And does Kodak work with you?
We do. So we have Kodak Behavioral Health Services. They're SOCASA. They're sexual assault services specifically. They do a lot of great partner work with us. We work with PPE Integrated Services. We work with the Southern Arizona Dream Center. A lot of really, really great partners, Pathways. I fear that I'm going to forget to mention all of them, but there are so many great partners that we work with.
And law enforcement, all law enforcement has that list of partners. But if they're afraid to call law enforcement, they can call any of these other agencies, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So one of the things that we're doing right now is this special initiative, and we were just talking about it, and it's the way we normally operate. But we're doing a special push right now with COVID-19 going on and all of the uncertainty that we know people are facing. A lot of people have lost their jobs and they found themselves in a desperate situation. And our fear is that people may be entering into the sex trade. And while we've been doing our normal research that we do, working the cases that we work, we have noticed some new faces popping up on the online escort ads that we look at. So we said, we've got to do something about this. So Saturn came together. We got all of our service providers to allow us to put out their phone numbers on pamphlets that we've put onto some of these online escort ads. We've put it all over social media, on our Facebook, the University of Arizona, they've put it out on their outlets. Tucson Police Department has it on their Facebook. So anywhere we can get this thing out, we are putting it out. And it basically says, hey, look, this is what human trafficking is. If you know somebody or if you yourself are a victim and you've found yourself entering the sex trade, we don't want you to get trafficked. And people newly coming in, just like the folks that are already in the sex trade, they're vulnerable of being targeted by traffickers. So that's our message that we want to get out, and we put the service provider information right there for them. So if they don't want to talk to law enforcement, they absolutely don't have to talk to us. They can call any one of the service providers based on the needs that they have and get direct services from them.
Now, there's a difference between prostitution and being sex trafficked. And it's dangerous to put yourself out there as a prostitute because you could end up being sex trafficked. And
yes,
it's a thin line.
So if you are engaged in prostitution, commercial sex, you are at risk of being trafficked. There are traffickers that they're recruiting, and they're actively recruiting people who are already in the sex trade because they are vulnerable of becoming under control.
Yeah, and if you have to resort to this, you know, you're really, really putting yourself out there. What stages do, trying to think of how to do this in a chronological order, what stages, if somebody calls in, because I think this is something that we really don't talk about, if somebody calls in and they do want to prosecute or they do want to, you know, help from law enforcement, one of the most important things is evidence. And most of your evidence is the crime scene, which in this case would be your body. So what can people expect if they end up going to a hospital? Because I know a forensic exam can take a long time. So.
Yeah, no, you're right. So we do our very best to educate our medical staff at the hospitals, at doctor's offices, anywhere a victim may come for services for some trauma or sexually transmitted disease or pregnancy, something that they're dealing with, or maybe they've been assaulted and they're in the hospital trying to recover from whatever injuries they sustained. In those cases, we do a lot of work with the medical staff so that they recognize what it is. Oftentimes, we have victims come in and it looks like just a pure domestic violence case. So they know that they've been assaulted by their boyfriend. Well, we hope that the training that we give to the medical staff allows them to ask more questions and find out, okay, is this really your boyfriend or is there a little bit more going on here? Yeah. And once the medical staff, once they start to recognize, hey, there are some indicators here and we don't know if this is exactly what's going on, but we think it might be, or maybe the victim actually discloses that they are in fact being trafficked, then they can contact us. They know they have our numbers. They know who to call. And if the victim wants to talk to us, we sit down and we talk to them. And sometimes it takes multiple interviews to be able to get the information that we need. Obviously, their testimony is part of our evidence, but we have a lot of other means to investigate these crimes and gather the evidence that we need. And so that's kind of the starting off point. But it's a long-term relationship, really, that we develop with the victims, because it takes quite a bit of time to work these cases. So that initial meet is just the very beginning of the experience that victim's going to have. And we always make sure that we put them first and we focus on what they need as far as resources. And then our investigative piece comes second.
Yeah, it's important. I think people in the heat of the moment too may not realize that, you know, hey, the most important thing here is let's preserve some of this evidence. Let's get to somebody who knows how to collect that evidence. And I've heard, I don't know what the situation is now, but I've heard there's a lot of rape kits out there that haven't been tested. So people don't know, you know, but don't let that stop you. Because I had somebody recently say, well, they don't test them anyway. They collect it, but they don't test it. And don't let that stop you. Because if you can collect the evidence, preserve the evidence, eventually you're going to have somebody who's going to be accountable for what they did to you.
Sure. And I can't speak to how much of the rape kit evidence collected is actually tested or not. You know, that's kind of outside of my wheelhouse, but it is a piece of evidence that could be collected within a human trafficking investigation. So I wouldn't let any discussion on what medical evidence may or may not be collected impact anyone's decision to get help.
Right.
That's something that could be a piece of it, but the important thing to remember is if you're being victimized, you just need to get help.
Yeah, just get out of the situation. And sometimes that's all they want, just get out of the situation. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Tammy from Homeland Security. We are talking about sex trafficking. And I want to know, how can we get the community involved? What should they be looking for? Because I think it was last week you and I were talking, and I told you it wasn't until I started learning all this from Jennifer Crawford that I realized I was witnessing this happening in California when I lived there. And the light bulb went on. And if the light bulb went on for me, other people need a light bulb moment. So what should they be looking for?
It really is all about education. And you mentioned Jen Crawford. She's a detective over at TPD. She's one of my task force officers. And we've been working together for a long time with this. Her sergeant, Ben Free, is amazing. But part of what we do as Saturn and part of what we do within our own agencies is outreach, trying to get as much education out to the community as possible so that people do know what to look for. We do a lot with our law enforcement as far as training, and we do a lot with the medical staff that I talked about, but we also go out into the communities and we talk to church groups and we talk to different organizations. We go to businesses that say, hey, we want our employees to learn about this and share it with their families. We try to do what we can with the schools. You know, that's always been a little bit difficult for us, but there are some good organizations that are doing things to be able to reach out to the schools. We do a lot with our social media awareness right now, especially with the kids being home and having more access to their phones and to their tablets. They're online all of the time. So we do, Jen Crawford with CPD, she does a specific social media awareness course to try to make people educated about what's going on, how they can actually recognize it, what indicators to look for, and then what to do about it, who to call.
And parents really need to take this class. I've been in her classes, and it's just mind-boggling what's going on. And it's going on right under your nose, and you don't even know it. Your kid comes home with an extra cell phone. Oh, it's my friend Susie's, and actually it's her trafficker.
It happens so fast. And these traffickers, they're good, man. They are on the apps, and they're on the little social media sites that they know kids are on. They know vulnerable adults are on, and they're seeking them out, and they're grooming them. And it happens very fast. And I think that parents can get to it sooner. They can recognize it sooner if they look for it, and if they're monitoring what their kids are doing on their phones and their applications, if they're looking through it. Sometimes it's as simple as learning what the updated emoji list means, because these kids, they're fast, and they come up with all kinds of different meanings for different things. And if the parents have had that education and they know what to look for, they can stop it.
Stop it before it starts. And I learned about the Urban Dictionary from Jen. And I was listening to somebody talk about something. I thought, oh, I've got to look that up because I don't know what it means and I don't want to look stupid. So I looked it up and I'm like, oh, that's what that means. So everybody needs to be aware of that as well. And, you know, if your daughter is coming home with, you know, new clothes, new purse, new jewelry and things like that, maybe you should question them. Maybe it wasn't a birthday gift.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of parents feel like they really know their kids. They really know their kids, and if something was going on, they feel like they would know about it. And sometimes the signs, they, you know, any one thing by itself, you might not think anything about. All but right. If you really start paying attention, and as you said, they start having items that they don't have money for, you know that they don't have money for, and now all of a sudden they have new clothes, or they've got some new shoes or jewelry, if their behavior starts to change, when someone is being trafficked, and even during the grooming stage, it's all about control for that trafficker. And so you will see victims slowly start to remove themselves from you. They start talking to you less. They're less open. They stop making eye contact with you. They make a lot of excuses for why they're not doing normal things that they did before, why they aren't hanging out with their friends that they previously hung out with. Yeah. And sometimes parents maybe should talk to their friends and say, hey, what's going on with my son or what's going on with my daughter right now? Do they seem normal to you?
Yeah, and check their phone. And I know there's some of those apps that will not be on the phone. They're only there for a little while and they disappear. How do you search for an app like that?
It's tough. So as a parent, you can set certain controls on the phone. You can link phones so you can see what's going on with your child's phone.
But okay, wait a minute. You can link a phone. So you can link your child's phone to your phone.
There are certain ways to do that. There are certain applications that allow you to do that. I am not an expert.
Okay, but it's available.
But there are options like that available to help you really take an eye onto what's going on your child's phone. So, like I said, I'm not an expert on everything that's available as far as monitoring, but there are ways to do it.
Okay.
And
it's good to know.
A good old school parent is just going to grab the phone and say, I must know the password, and I'm going to check out your phone.
Yeah, or we're going to figure out the password. My friendly neighborhood hacker is going to open up your phone.
That being said, it's much, much easier said than done. You know, I mean, it's difficult for these parents to exert that much control over their kids, especially when they're teenagers. So it's all fine and good for us to talk about it. But when they're actually trying to do it, it's a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me what happened in, was it Texas we were talking about before the show?
Oh, yeah. So it's funny because, you know, we're talking about this project that we're doing right now with trying to get all of our victim service contact information out there to anyone who might need it or know somebody who needs it. And I've been posting these little ads that provide the information onto some of the escort sites that we see. And one of these sites was City X Guide. And lo and behold, I've been posting on this site. And on June 17th, actually, our HSI Dallas office arrested the owner of that site and some of the affiliated sites. And this guy, really interesting case, he actually registered City X Guides and these other sites the day after FBI took down Backpage. So as soon as that void was there, these sites slid right in and took over. And I will tell you, some of the things that I have seen on these sites was much worse than what I ever saw on Backpage, as far as the images and the ads. But our HSI Dallas, the working together with Secret Service, they were able to arrest the owner of these sites. He's got a 28-count indictment. This guy is facing all kinds of stuff from, I wrote some of this down here. He's facing promotion of prostitution and reckless disregard that facilitates sex trafficking. He's got a count of interstate racketeering and conspiracy to facilitate prostitution. He's got some interstate transportation and aid of racketeering charges, which is also the facilitation of prostitution. He's got like 17 counts of money laundering. This guy was doing, he was doing a lot. He was making a lot of money off of these sites, off of selling sex online. And the problem I think that so many people have is the opportunity for people to be trafficked, for women and children and men to be trafficked on these sites. And so it was really good to be able to see that we're using things like FASA that came through after Backpage to be able to make these prosecutions go and hopefully protect some of these vulnerable people from being victimized.
Okay, they made that arrest. Did any of the victims get help? Do they have any of the victims from what this man was doing, or are they like...
I am not aware. I wasn't part of the investigation.
Okay.
So this was our HSI Dallas office. So I don't have the specifics on if they do or if they don't have any victims. This information is all available online. So you can just Google it and you'll be able to see exactly what HSI Dallas and their partners in the Secret Service out there were able to do with this case. And it's going to be an ongoing thing. Obviously the arrest was just made. So
no Backpage is still ongoing.
Yeah. No, there have been no convictions yet. You know, this site was just seized and an arrest was made. So it's at the very beginning. And you'll be able to watch as this case plays out in court. Media has already jumped on it. You can see articles right now if you Google it.
And this is what we were talking about. And we periodically do shows on sex trafficking. And we were talking about after Backpage went down, these people were creating sites that appeared to be from foreign countries when they were already here, or actually here in Arizona. I mean, they were right here in trying to avoid being followed or captured or arrested. They would send their web page through a different country to make it look like it was a foreign agency doing it and not somebody here.
Yeah, it happened in this case. It's happened in other cases where the servers are here in the United States, but they've been routed through a VPN to, you know, some other country somewhere in Europe where it looks like that's where the servers are housed, but it's just disguised and the servers are actually here in the U.S. So that
makes me really happy.
That allows us to do something about it.
Yes, absolutely. That makes me very happy. Okay. Let's take a break and we'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Tammy from Homeland Security. We're talking about sex trafficking and how the public can get involved, not in starting your own trafficking network, but how to stop it. So let's be clear. I know there's classes that people can take. If business or a group of people who are normally together, would you be willing to go and train a company's employees? I mean, COVID has stopped a lot of training. But, you know, as we used to do classes, Jen did classes, and we supplied the room and here, you know, educate people.
But yes, we will do training anywhere it's needed. So you can actually look at our website. It's www.saaturn.org. You can go on there and you can submit a request for a training, and we can, gladly, we'll get something together for you. And we like to do the trainings where we have not only the law enforcement side, but also some of the victim service providers, so that you, that the audience can learn about what each of us does and how we work together. And we'll go anywhere. We'll go to a church. We'll go to a business. We'll go anywhere you want us.
That's awesome. We have a caller on the line. Ingrid, what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, this goes back to your interjection about people who submit the rape kits testing is being done on them. This strikes me as being very antagonistic toward the victim. Perhaps is law enforcement ever involved in what gets tested or not, and how fast? I bring this up because drugs are so often involved in this too, and it's such a shame. I can tell you something that happened to me. I've been registering complaints about things in the atmosphere in my own home, a condo, like an apartment building. And it's really outrageous. And I was told, well, why don't you go to the emergency room and complain about it over there? Well, I went there, and I said what was happening. And the doctor, a medical doctor, after a few minutes said to me, that's what they all say. He was implying that I was a drug addict. This is a very, very difficult situation with the drugs and the prostitution and the horror of involving children and any a person of any age being forced into this. What are you aware that this goes on? There's a hostility towards certain people, even people who have worked in Neighborhood Watch. They are not exactly admired. What is going on? Could you look into that, please? And tell Sherry what you found out. Thank you very much. I'll hang up and listen off the air.
Well, thank you for listening, Ingrid. I know for a while there, when people were being arrested, the victim would sometimes be arrested for doing inappropriate things when actually they were a victim and they weren't the perpetrator. And I think there's a conscience level of, hey, these people are victims. They are have been, and explain what the different levels of how people can be victimized and held hostage, basically. And, you know, this is a learning experience for all of us.
Yes, for all of us. And I think Ingrid's talking about a lot of different areas of encounters that she or someone else may have. So if you're talking about really everyone as a whole, the awareness of what human trafficking is and who a victim is and what they're going through, their experience, it's evolved a lot over the years. I mean, I think that there were so many things that were missed and not recognized in previous years that, yes, that, you know, people were dealt with in a different way. And as we've
evolved,
developed and evolved and really learned about what this is, we've created a really great victim-centered approach where these things don't happen the way that they used to happen. They aren't handled the way that they used to be handled because we've recognized, hey, that's not the best way to deal with this person and what they're going through. And this isn't what they need right now to be recovered. So I think when you're looking at whether it's law enforcement or whether it's medical staff or whether it's the general community, as we learn more about this, we handle the situation better. And, you know, I would hate for anyone to go through an experience that Ingrid sounds like she's maybe gone through or know someone who has, that's not what we want to do right now, and that's not okay. So we are really working together to try to make sure that victims receive the respect and the treatment that they need when they are dealing with either law enforcement, medical staff, or members of the general public. So
and that's part that of what some of these question. classes are about too. She hit on it. And if you need a class out there, Ingrid, to teach the people in your HOA about what's going on, maybe you should set something up with management, and that might help educate them, because people don't know what they don't know until they've taken these classes.
Sure.
And I've said that so many times.
And we're happy to come out and share where we are right now, because I think people have had negative experiences in the past, and so they carry that forward and think, I'm never going to reach out to law enforcement, or I'm never going to go to the hospital again because I was treated badly at one point, when, you know, we have developed and we are working towards making sure that we keep this victim-centered approach when we're dealing with these cases.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we all need to keep in mind when we're talking to victims, too, is they might be so paranoid about getting help and doing the right thing and actually helping themselves.
I can't tell you how many times we've had victims that we've encountered when we've been out working on the law enforcement side who have thanked us later at some point and said, you know, when I first met you, I was mad and I was angry and I was hurting and I didn't want to talk to you, but I now see that you really just wanted to help me. And yeah. So, you know, a lot of times we don't make cases on what we're dealing with when we come into contact with a victim because they're not ready, or it's just there's not enough to prosecute, but we still develop a relationship with them in getting them the help that they need. That, you know, I still have girls calling me from years ago that, you know,
stay in touch.
Yeah. And so anytime that happens, it's a win for me. It's a win for them to get them to a better place where they're out of their situation.
Absolutely. And I'm all for it. And I know there's a lot of organizations, just about everybody in town that I know of. If you walk up to somebody and say, hey, I'm a victim, they're going to know what to do if you go to these organizations, and they're going to help you. So maybe that's what you need to do, Ingrid. Find one of these organizations and get the help, not just go to the emergency room and talk to a random doctor, because he can't. And I think what she did was go to report something. She's not the victim. She's trying to report somebody else that might be a victim. And I don't know what the response was.
You know what? If you're talking about reporting and how you can do that if maybe you don't want to talk to law enforcement, when you call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, the number is 1-888-373-7888. You can also text them. You can go online and you can email them, but you can provide them with whatever information it is that you have, even if you don't know that there's trafficking going on, but you're seeing some indicators and you just want to tell somebody about it. You can call them and they will vet that information out and they'll send it to the law enforcement and the service providers that are in that area so that everyone can talk to each other about it, figure out the best way to deal with that information. And if you contact them and you say, hey, look, I'm not willing to talk to law enforcement. I don't want to be involved with an investigation, but I want someone to have this information or I want them to get services. They'll do that too.
You can stay anonymous.
You absolutely stay anonymous.
And maybe express what some of the indicators would be for, like, somebody living in a neighborhood, just observing what's going on in their neighborhood. What would the indicators be? Sure. Maybe, you know, she thinks she sees something that's not really an indicator.
So we get a lot of calls from people. We get a lot of tips from the hotline about just people, things that aren't right in your community. You hear people yelling or people screaming. It sounds like maybe there is some abuse going on. You might see some other things along with that, a lot of foot traffic.
Okay, explain foot traffic.
Okay, so some of our reports have been, say, about a lot of men going into a specific apartment. And it's regular turnover and not 24/7. The same guys, but you're seeing a lot of people come in and out. That's not normal. That's, something is going on in there, and it may not be trafficking. It could be something else entirely different. But it's one indicator where someone says, hey, look, I think there's something going on over at my neighbor's apartment. I just want to tell somebody. Who do I tell? That's a perfect example of when you might reach out to the National Human Trafficking Resource Center and say, this apartment at this location, I'm seeing this. And hopefully I'm willing to be contacted by law enforcement so I can describe to them in person what it is that I'm seeing.
And you can stay anonymous.
Or if you don't want to talk to law enforcement, you say, nope, I'm not willing to talk to law enforcement and I don't want to give you my name.
So there you have it. And if you work in a hotel and you see some strange activity going on in a hotel, and this is something that's not uncommon to see happening, especially with the hotels along I-10, where you can get in, get it, and get out.
Yep. No, and we work a lot with these staff. We go out, we provide trainings, hospitality trainings to the staff at many of the hotels and motels in the Tucson area. Jen and I have both been out to provide all of our contact information. And when they ask for trainings, we come out, we give them trainings. There's a really great project while we're on this topic called Safe Action Project. It's out of Phoenix, but it's DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, is a collaborator with this project. And they have a whole presentation and a toolkit that they will go out. I've gone with them. Chris, the guy that does it, he's amazing. We go out to hotels and provide them an hour-long training to the staff. And I know we did one just a couple of months ago, and we hit every shift. So the hotel said, yes, this is important to us. We want our employees to have this training. So Safe Action comes out. There's no charge. They just provide the training, and we leave all the materials with the staff, so even if they didn't want to ask questions, they can still contact later and ask questions.
You know, sometimes people are, especially with this topic, are intimidated to ask questions in a group setting. That's why we try to keep the group small so people aren't so intimidated about that, because the more you ask, the more you're going to learn. And any organization that has access periodically to homes, or they need to know what they're looking for, what they're looking at. And I'm in a lot of homes because of what I do. And sometimes I think I should write a book, but other times I think I should report it. And other times you're not sure if you should spray it with Lysol or Raid. It's just a real strange setting.
That's why it's so important to, if you see something that's not right, say something about it. Reach out, provide the information you have. Maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's something. And I will take 10, 20 different leads that pan out to be absolutely nothing other than some of the indicators look good, but it turned out it really wasn't trafficking going on, for that one that I'm able to actually find a victim and get them help.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to help everybody. What about this Immigration Stabilizing Foreign National Victims of Crimes? I'm reading.
So let me see what you've got there. Okay. I think what you are looking at there is talking about, there are a lot of misconceptions about trafficking, and people that maybe are victims of human trafficking that are foreign nationals, the misconception is they have to be a foreign national, when the majority of the victims that I've come into contact with have all been United States citizens. But part of the reason that it's difficult to come into contact with a foreign national is because they have a lot of fears. They don't want to come forward to law enforcement because they've been told by their trafficker, by their families, by their friends, that if law enforcement finds you, you're going to be deported.
Yeah.
And you'll, you know, be further victimized. And so what we really want to get out there to people is Homeland Security Investigations has a lot of capabilities to assist foreign national victims. We have a lot of resources available to us. So if you are a victim of human trafficking, we are never going to bring charges against you for something related to that trafficking. And that includes your status. We have the capabilities to provide immigration relief to them through the form of visas that are available that they can apply for, and we can certify for if they are assisting with our investigation. They can, now these visas are actually available through Citizenship and Immigration, but law enforcement does the certification for them. But it allows them to stay in the United States. It allows them to work. It allows them to assist us with the case to prosecute their traffickers, the people that victimize them. And then they can adjust. Once they've received one of these visas, they can adjust to a lawful permanent resident.
Explain the difference between human trafficking, sex trafficking, and labor trafficking.
Okay, so human trafficking is both sex and labor. Sex trafficking is all about commercial sex, and it's exploitation of women, children, men, anyone in commercial sex if there is force, fraud, or coercion. Those are the elements that we look at unless they are under the age of 18. If you were a child, if you were under the age of 18 and you're being involved with commercial sex, you're committing commercial sex on behalf of somebody, you are automatically a trafficking victim. If you are an adult, we need to show the force, fraud, or coercion that caused you to commit that commercial sex act. Someone has to be profiting. On the labor trafficking side, it's, you know, we're talking about forced labor. We're talking about indentured servitude, peonage, basic slavery. When someone is put into a forced work situation, you can find it a lot of different places. We look in the agricultural field. We look in the hospitality industry, restaurants,
housekeeping.
Housekeeping, yes, absolutely.
That's the biggest one.
Yes, that is one of the major ones because it's so difficult to find. It's so difficult to identify these victims because they don't identify as victims and they don't have the means to contact people. So I always get asked why we work more sex trafficking than labor trafficking. And it really is because we just come into contact with these people that are being sex trafficked more often than we come into people who might be being labor trafficked. In a law enforcement sense, right? So when you're dealing with sex trafficking, there are a lot of other arrest situations or instances that cause law enforcement to come into contact with a person to be able to recognize that they are a victim.
And it's if you know somebody, and I think the biggest thing for labor trafficking when it comes to housekeeping, people have housekeepers, that if you've got a friend who has a housekeeper that maybe doesn't speak English, or is, you know.
There's all kinds of barriers.
There's and barriers.
As we talked about with the foreign nationals, you know, some of the things that cause them even more trouble trying to report is they don't speak the language, and they're afraid, and they're not in their familiar surroundings.
And misinformed about what's going to happen if they do report it.
They've been told law enforcement will treat you badly. Law enforcement will remove you. They will deport you. They will put you in jail. So when we encounter a lot of our victims on both the sex and labor side, they do not trust law enforcement.
No.
Until they start to realize that we really are there to help.
And a lot of that has to do with the country they're coming from, too, because there are some countries, and I have one of my board members said, you know, in his country, not his origin, he's born here, but he said people run away if they see law enforcement. They run away just because they're not the friends. They're not a friendly person.
Absolutely. So I teach for the International Law Enforcement Academy, and in doing that, I go to different countries and I train their law enforcement at all levels. And one of the things that we talk about is corruption issues.
Yeah.
And they exist. And the victims that are in those countries may identify law enforcement as the enemy, as somebody who will further victimize them, because there have been cases of that. So that's part of what I'm doing out there, is trying to really teach these law enforcement agencies how they can combat some of those issues that they're having and correct those issues while also learning how to do human trafficking investigations.
And what you do is so needed, and I appreciate your service. Thank you so much. I want to tell everybody, too, Monday at 5:03 in the afternoon, they want everybody to get in their car, drive past their local law enforcement, and honk your horn, make some racket, and show them that you appreciate them. And when I first read the bulletin, I thought they were talking about 5 in the morning, and I was like, yeah, you're going to make a lot of friends. But it's 5 in the afternoon, 5:03 exactly. just drive around and show law enforcement that you appreciate them. There's stations, there's sheriff departments, they're all over the place. Let them know that you care. We appreciate our men and women in blue. I also want to remind people, don't use your drone on Mount Lemmon. Stay away. Let these people do their jobs. It's very important that they have access without being hindered by the public. And next week, we're going to have search and rescue on. They're going to tell us what we can do and not do, and what we do need to do to prepare if we're going to go for that hike after the fire's out. And until then, I want everybody to shop local, stay safe, stay healthy, and wear a mask.